Welcome to Fanboy News Network, your guide to geek culture. I'm your host, Jeff Harris, and this is our first official episode. This one is going to be a very straightforward episode, by the way. We're just going to go over some recent news in geek culture. With that, let's just go ahead and jump right in. First story this week is what's been dominating a lot of conversation on the boards and in the shops, and that is the casting news for the Superman versus Batman movie. They have announced that an actress from Fast and Furious 6, Gal Gadot, will be playing Wonder Woman. So yes, we are going to be getting Wonder Woman in the Superman-Batman movie. As always, with casting like this, it immediately polarizes the fandom. But that's always been true. I mean, I remember these kind of reactions back when the first X-Men movie came out and they announced the casting. So what are people saying? Well, there's not a lot we can really say about Gal Gadot herself. She is a relative unknown. I've never watched any of the Fast and Furious movies. And looking at her IMDb page, it looks like she's not been in much else. So, yeah, unknown factor. So we have no idea what kind of acting experience we're going to get from her as Wonder Woman. This has, of course, led everyone to focusing on her looks. And this, again, is where the fandom gets incredibly polarized. Again, using our example of the X-Men movie, a lot of people complained over the fact that Hugh Jackman at 6'2 was over a foot taller than Wolverine is traditionally depicted in the comics. And that drove people nuts. Now, his performance ended up changing a lot of people's minds because he embodied the character so well. And that's what we can hope for. One thing I like is that she is Israeli and has a look that is not traditionally European Caucasian. That works for me for Wonder Woman because being from the island of Themyscira and essentially descended from Greeks, she should have that kind of ethnic look. So I'm fine with that. But the one thing that everyone's focusing on is she's skinny. I mean, she's really skinny. I look at pictures of her and I think this is not somebody I think of as a superhero. And that's what a lot of people are latching onto. Now, she's 5'9". That's not terribly short. It's not bad for an actress. But Wonder Woman is often depicted as looking straight on eye to eye with Superman. So, the interpretation is we would want to see a taller actress. But as I've said to people in comic shops at conventions for years, we can't make those kind of determinations based on the look alone. If Wolverine had been cast strictly on appearance, then Glenn Danzig would have ended up playing the character. I don't think we would have gotten the acting performance we would have liked out of him. And honestly, you know who else was really skinny when they first got cast as a superhero? Christopher Reeve. Superman, really skinny. Also, Christian Bale was very skinny when he initially got cast as Batman. He had just done The Machinist, where for the part, he had had to lose so much weight that he looked emaciated, and he bulked up. So the fact that she's not bulked up right now doesn't necessarily mean she won't be by the time the movie is filming. But the thing that really got me when I looked at some initial pictures of her was, wow, she kind of reminds me of Scarlett Johansson. And I think that's really what got my attention. She reminded me of Scarlett Johansson. And this has me thinking that Warner Brothers is casting with an eye of competing directly with Marvel. And I love Scarlett Johansson as the Black Widow. And it works so well because in the comics, the Black Widow is often described as having a body like a ballerina or a gymnast. So Scarlett's frame, her height, everything works perfectly with that character. And, of course, the acting performance pulls off the rest of it. Again, we don't have a lot to talk about because we don't know anything else about her. We also have no idea how big a part Wonder Woman is going to be in the movie. They've only just announced that they cast her. We don't know if this is an extended cameo, if it's a significant supporting character, if she's going to be in most of the movie or only 5 minutes of the movie. We don't know anything other than they've announced her casting. The other thing that this leads people to thinking is, well, when we get a solo Wonder Woman movie, is this going to be our Wonder Woman? Conventional wisdom says, well, yes. Yes, this will be. If we get our Wonder Woman movie. A lot of speculation. And if there's one thing fandom loves to do, it's speculate. So I'll try and keep an open mind, keep an eye on this, but it is the big thing that's been dominating a lot of the discussion lately. And speaking of DC Comics and things that have been dominating some discussion lately, on the comic book side, I'm sure a lot of you who follow comics know that if you live in an area where it's not easy to get to a comic shop, you are not without hope. You can always buy a subscription to the comics directly from the publisher. Well, this month, subscribers to Detective Comics got an unpleasant surprise. What they got was a letter. This letter came from Jeff Boyson, who is the Vice President of Publishing Planning at DC Comics. And the letter informed them that they would not be receiving a copy of Detective Comics number 27. The reason they're not getting that is that this is being considered a milestone issue and is going to be a supersized 96-page issue that is going to retail for $7.99. And because it is significantly more expensive than a normal issue, DC decided not to include it as part of the subscription package. And I find that very problematic on several levels. Of course, the big one is, what if you can't get to a comic shop? What if you're a soldier deployed overseas and the way you get your comics is through a subscription? I don't think you can take furlough just to come back and find a comic shop. And last year, there was a supersized issue of one of the Green Lantern books. Same price point. The subscribers got that issue. It's breaking everything up. And the way it was written, it really has this is just the way it is. We're not giving you any real recourse. Now, to be fair, there's a line at the bottom. To locate a retailer, please visit www.comicshoplocator.com or call 1-888-comic-book. That implies they're trying to help, but that's just a comic shop locator. It doesn't do anything for those people who have no way of getting to a comic shop. Now, this could have been a really easy fix. DC could have sent the letter out and said, this is going to be more expensive. If you want to receive the issue, go here to pay the extra charge for this issue and we'll still send it to you. That is not the option they chose. The option they chose was basically, you're not getting this issue, that's it. To me, this is basically going to their loyal fans who subscribe and going, lump it. And this is just another in a string of really bad PR decisions that DC Comics has been making of late. If you go to the site, Fanboy News Network, I wrote a piece about a month or so ago. It's entitled DC PR Meltdown. And it discussed the reactions fans had to the Harley Quinn contest and the announcement that they were not going to go ahead with the wedding in Batwoman and the creators left and them saying that no comic book character is married. That's a whole nother issue I could do a whole episode on. And the way they handled the PR on that when fans complained was that both Jim Lee and Dan DiDio went online on Twitter and basically were arguing with fans. It's like they have no sense of how to do PR now. Now, I haven't heard any major fallout from this current incident yet. It also just happened, so we'll have to wait and see. It's just another sign of DC just dropping the ball when it comes to treating their fans well. Well, with that said, I've been kind of ragging on DC, either in the movies or in the comics, but you know what? It's not all bad, because there is one thing that is going just great for them, one thing that is hitting on all thrusters and doing exactly what you'd want it to be, and that's the TV series Arrow. Now, I've always had a weird thing with Arrow. I want to have a chance to ask somebody involved in the show why they dropped the word green from it. Why is it not Green Arrow? Why is it just Arrow? It makes no sense. I have theories, but you know what? Again, that's nitpicky. The show is great. The show is exactly what I want to see in a superhero show. It's been compared to Batman Begins, certainly in the first season, that was very true. But this show has just been on a roll. It's really getting the feel of the characters. I'm engaged, and they're constantly adding new elements from the DC universe. And it is really, really beginning to roll into a good superhero show that I buy into. And there were several decisions. One, they avoided the mistake of Smallville, which was they did not make this a prequel. This first season was Green Arrow year one. And it's just going from there. He's already the hero. He's learning as he goes. He's developing. And they treat the characters well. The two characters who are his assistants, John Diggle and Felicity Smoke, those two characters were written intelligently. Most of the time on a show like these, you've got the characters that they go to for information, but they don't want to reveal the secret. There's the lame excuses, and you always wonder, how does this person not figure out who he is? This show subverted it by having the characters start to figure stuff out and the hero having to bring them into the fold because they were intelligent enough that they were going to figure it out anyway. That works. It's always had that kind of organic feel of that. And as they're adding new elements from the comics, it just has a great feel of, I love where this is going. They've got Brother Blood, who is a Teen Titan villain, who looks to be the big villain of this season. They've, of course, got Roy Harper, who was the sidekick Speedy in the original Green Arrow comics. They have Slade Wilson, who is Deathstroke, as a major character on the show, a regular on the series. Again, a Teen Titan villain, but one who also had a lot of interaction with Green Arrow in the comics. They are pulling from all of DC Universe. Basically anything that's not already co-opted by Superman or Batman seems to be fair game for them. They just recently introduced a character named Cyrus Gold, who has been given a formula to give him enhanced strength. Cyrus Gold is the name of the character who died and got resurrected as Solomon Grundy, major character in the DC Universe. And this last episode, they introduced Barry Allen, who is going to be the Flash. And that's going to be leading into the Flash spinoff. Overall, this is a really good series. They're writing intelligent scripts, they are developing their characters well, and ultimately they're trusting that the audience is pretty smart and can follow along with them. And that's the best thing of all. So for all I've been ragging on DC for the other problems, on TV they seem to know what they're doing and are going all thrusters. So more power to them, and I'm going to continue to enjoy Arrow. And if you haven't checked it out, Season 1 is on Netflix. Give it a shot. Now, the last thing I want to talk about this episode is, and I saved it for last because it's bad, and it's something that needs to be talked about, and I could go on for a while on this. I don't know how long I'm going to take, but it's something that needs to be dealt with as a community. And what I'm talking about is the idea of harassment at conventions. Again, if you follow the columns I write on my site, you know this is an issue I've covered in the past. I will keep covering both in the columns and here on the podcast. But an incident happened, and it happened here in Seattle, you know, in my backyard. It cannot be allowed to be pushed under the rug. What happened is over the weekend of October 25th through the 27th, there is a convention in the Seattle area called AkiCon. It's an anime convention. I think this is its fourth year. It's a small convention that's trying to grow, and it has had its problems in the past. Last year, it became infamous in that it put its artist alley section in the hotel parking garage. And this, again, this is Seattle in October. It's cold and it's wet. And they were in a parking garage that was not very well weather sealed. And that's artists. That's with their artwork. But that's nothing compared to what happened this last weekend. AkiCon, for one of their dances, hired a DJ who goes by the name DJ Victor Malice. This guy's real name is Leslie Shotwell. The issue here is that Mr. Shotwell spent 4 years in prison in Arizona for sexual conduct with a minor. He's a sex offender. His charges were sexual contact with a minor, attempt to commit a sexual act with a minor, and dangerous crimes against children. He is not on the registry in the state of Washington, but from what I'm getting, that could be that he didn't register, which itself is illegal. The point is that leading up to the convention, some people saw him on the list, did some checking, and found out about his history, and contacted the convention with their concerns, urging them not to hire him because of his history as a sex offender, and that it was not a good place for him to be at a convention where there are a lot of minors. This was not heeded. As a result, he was at the convention, and what has happened is there was a girl at the convention. Now, they say minor. She is 18, so she is not a minor, but she's too young to drink. And it appears from the reports that she was roofied. There has been a tox screen, and it did find traces of the drug in her system. And they, again, the reports I'm reading from various sources say that a rape kit was done and that she was sexually assaulted. I suppose I should have put trigger warnings in here. I'll make sure to put that in the notes. There are criminal charges being pressed. So that's one. You know, the convention was warned. They hired him anyway, and then something did happen. But that is not the end of the story. The convention was confronted about this. The convention is basically taking what I can only describe as a victim-blaming stance. I am going to now read you verbatim the response from the convention. It has come to the public light through a YouTube video that an underage young woman who was a member of the cosplay group, they blanked it out, guests of our convention claims to have been sexually assaulted by another guest in a private hotel room. AkiCon did in fact know of the situation and advised the young woman and man in question to contact the police. AkiCon's guest liaison stayed with the young woman to aid her when the police arrived to take her statement and the other person's statement. After that, this became a police matter. AkiCon has no further information, nor will AkiCon be releasing information to the public, as the persons in question are entitled to privacy. AkiCon advises all attendees to make good choices, stay with friends and trusted loved ones. AkiCon has rules against underage drinking and drug use, but AkiCon cannot control what attendees or guests or even other guests of the venue do in private rooms, and remains a neutral party as the incident in question happened in a private hotel room. I would advise all persons not to pass judgment on either party as you don't know the details or circumstances. As for the accused, in America everyone is innocent until proven you are guilty, and thus we will leave the rest up to the judicial system. It is upsetting that these things happen in every setting, whether at work, school, concerts, churches, etc., and that is why AkiCon advises all attendees to make good choices and be safe. We live in a wonderful and dangerous world, and to think that this doesn't seep into our little anime world would be foolish. Our thoughts have been with the young woman in question, and we hope that both parties get the help they deserve. Now, I'm sure some of you have listened to that and are going, what's wrong with that? Well, there's a couple things. One is the whole make good choices thing. This girl was drugged. It is a victim blaming that I can't stand. And also the convention completely stepped away from any responsibility. Combined with their foreknowledge of this person's past and his potential to be a danger to the convention, that is what bothers me. There's already a problem in that AkiCon does not have a posted anti-harassment policy. And if you followed John Scalzi at all, you know that's becoming a big issue in the fanish community. So I have a real problem with this. This is the kind of thing that cannot stand. We have to make sure these things are not allowed to continue. And when you have a convention that is being that blatantly disregarding of attendee safety, and then turns around and tries to lump the blame on the attendees, I have a real problem with that. I will be following this story. I have a suspicion I will probably touch on it again. Until then, I leave it to you, the community, to decide how you want to react to it. I myself normally don't attend anime conventions, so there's no chance I would. But if I knew anyone who was attending, I would strongly advise them not to go. How you decide to deal with it is, of course, your choice, but these things cannot be allowed to be swept under the rug. They have to be brought to light, they have to be talked about, and they have to be dealt with. And when these concerns come up, they have to be taken seriously. And that is the bottom line. And I hate to leave it on a bummer like that, but that is the episode for this time around. A few quick notes. First off, I have some thank yous I'd like to make, as this is the first episode. First person I want to thank is my good friend John Calderon. John was instrumental in helping me solve some technical issues that were plaguing me in getting this podcast put up. I cannot thank him enough for getting those taken care of. John is a blogger and podcaster himself. You can check out his site at quantumzen.net, quantumxen.net. I would also like to thank my friend Julie Hoverson, who is the creator of the website 19 Nocturne Boulevard. This is a audio drama podcast. She is also the producer of The Hole Behind Midnight, an audiobook that I am one of the voice talents on. She sat down and showed me some great tricks on audio mixing and cleaning up the audio. I know that in the episode zero, things were a little lower volume than initially expected. That's part of my learning process, but things would have been a lot worse without Julie's help, and it was invaluable. If you'd like to give me feedback on this show, things you'd like to hear, things I can improve, or just your opinion on the stories, I can be reached either by going to www.fanboynewsnetwork.com and dropping a note in the comments section for this podcast. You can also email me at caliban@fanboynewsnetwork.com. Yes, just like in Shakespeare, C-A-L-I-B-A-N. And a little thing there, I am basically a podcaster without a sign-off catchphrase. I don't know if I necessarily need one, but a lot of people have them. It might be nice. And all I can ever think of is let your geek flag fly, and I don't know that I'm happy with that one. So if you have any suggestions, I'd be happy to hear them. Well, with that, my name's Jeff Harris. This is Fanboy News Network, and thank you for listening. Take care. This program is produced by Jeff Harris and Fanboy News Network and is copyright 2013 to Jeff Harris and Fanboy News Network. All rights are reserved, including rights to copy and redistribute this program. All music in this podcast comes from the Footage Firm and is used under a royalty-free license.